This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman, and here are some of the latest news stories related to the global coronavirus pandemic. France will start easing coronavirus lockdown rules in the coming weeks, carrying out the process in three stages to avoid a new flare-up in the pandemic, the government said on Sunday. On Tuesday, President Emmanuel Macron will give a speech to the nation about the virus situation and may announce a partial relaxation of rules which have been in place since October 30th. South Korea's capital Seoul and nearby areas will close bars and nightclubs, limit religious gatherings, and restrict service at restaurants in a bid to contain a third wave of infections, the health minister said Sunday. The Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency reported 330 new daily coronavirus cases as of midnight on Saturday, a drop from 386 reported the day before, but the fifth straight day of more than 300 new cases. Dubai's health regulator said Sunday that children aged between 3 and 16 could now be tested for COVID-19 by providing a saliva sample instead of the widely used nasal swab. The saliva test had been permitted following a research study by the regulator and a local university, the Dubai Health Authority said on Twitter. Moderna will charge governments between $25 and $37 per dose of its COVID-19 vaccine candidate. Depending on the amount ordered, the company's chief executive told a German newspaper, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued emergency use authorization for Regeneron Pharmaceuticals' COVID-19 antibody therapy. It's an experimental treatment given to U.S. President Donald Trump that he said helped cure him of the disease. This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Sunday he was ready to work with any U.S. leader and would congratulate whoever emerges the winner of the U.S. presidential election once all the legal formalities are settled. This is what Russian news agencies are reporting. Putin has withheld comment while President Donald Trump has been taking legal action regarding votes cast for rival Joe Biden in the November 3rd presidential election. On state TV, the Russian president said, "We will work with anyone who has the trust of the American people." He went on to say that the winner must be named either by the opposing party, which should acknowledge the victory of their opponent, or after the final results of the election are confirmed in a legitimate legal way. And we should add that VOA has projected Joe Biden as the winner. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga said on Sunday that his country will lead international efforts to combat climate change. He said this in comments on the sidelines of the G20 summit. Suga has already said that Japan will aim for net zero emissions by 2050, making a green society one of his key policy priorities. He added that addressing climate change is not a constraint on economic growth and that Japan will lead international society in realizing a decarbonized world. Under international pressure to do more to address global warming, Chinese President Xi Jinping told the G20 that China would implement its own initiatives, including achieving carbon neutrality by 2060. Japanese lawmakers on Thursday declared a climate emergency in a symbolic vote aimed at increasing pressure for action to combat global warming after Japan last month committed its firm timetable for net zero emissions. Japan is the world's fifth biggest carbon emitter. With this vote, it joins Britain, Canada, and France in similar resolutions, as well as the European Union as a bloc and nearly 2,000 regional and city authorities around the world. China plans to launch an unmanned spacecraft to the moon this week. Its mission is to bring back lunar rocks in the first attempt by any nation to retrieve samples from Earth's moon since the 1970s. The spacecraft is named after the ancient Chinese goddess of the moon and will seek to collect material that can help scientists understand more about the moon's origins and formation. The mission will also test China's ability to remotely acquire samples from space ahead of more complex missions. For more on these and other international news stories, please visit our website at voanews.com. Via remote, Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
It's an African election, and we have to go fast and good and fast and quickly. So the CNU wants to go fast to give a good result and quickly to avoid all kind of violence about this election.
Voters in Burkina Faso choose a new president Sunday.
To have such and such technology, and this is how it will be used in a safe manner, especially given that we have COVID-19 around us. So it's all part of the confidence-building efforts that we are making, and, of course, adapting technology to enhance transparency and credibility of the process.
The Electoral Commission of Uganda comes under criticism for sending the voter register abroad for review.
We are denouncing this specific event because it's the last of a series during years in Salamavira and in other parts of East Congo. So our efforts are not only to provide health care to these survivors, but also we are trying to stop that problem or to reduce it.
And Doctors Without Borders calls for an end to escalating cases of sexual violence. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Burkina Faso, civil society groups say they are pleased with the peaceful campaign season leading to the presidential election Sunday. They, however, say it is unclear if a recent jihadist attack will affect voter turnout. Analysts say incumbent President Marc Christian Kabore is expected to face a stiff challenge from the opposition. Although he has strong support, the analysts say the president's poor handling of the novel coronavirus can affect his re-election prospects. This after the Popular Congress for Democracy and Progress, the party founded by former President Blaise Compaoré, qualified to compete in Sunday's poll. For the latest political development and plans by the Electoral Commission to begin publishing election results, I reached Lionel Bilgo, a political analyst and CEO of Timiniyi's Media in the Burkinabe capital, Ouagadougou.
We are all happy for this campaign because it's a peaceful campaign. We saw all the people in Ouagadougou and in the town and in other cities of the country happy to go in campaign, and we didn't register a violence for this campaign. Only the jihadists make an attack and killed 14 soldiers. About this event, there is no violent event that we register for this campaign.
As you have interacted with many Burkinabes, how do they feel about voting?
They feel very good and happy for the voting. You know that for this election, CDP, the former President Blaise Compaoré party, is going to participate for this election. So it's very, very important for the militants to go and vote.
Do you think the former president's party would have any significant impact in the election? Or you think the opposition is strong enough to defeat incumbent president, or that the president could win re-election? What is your analysis?
Yes, the former president party is very strong, and they are in four ways of the country, and they are strong. So they can be a good challenger for the president, Roch Marc Christian Kabore, and it is a big party. It's a big party because they know the strongest of this party, and they know that they can do a good score for this election. So it's a very important election, and we cannot say today who is the winner. We have to wait tomorrow.
So you mean that the election is really going to be competitive, and there's a possibility President Kabore could lose?
Yes, there is this possibility. Even I think that the President Kabore party is also strong, but the insecurity and corruption and COVID, they manage it very, very badly. So there is a lot of people that are very annoyed about this party, and many people want changement. But I don't know if they will go to vote. It depends on the motivation of those people.
How credible do Burkinabes feel about how the Electoral Commission has organized the election so far?
They know that the commission worked on it very well and on transparency way, because we see that all the voice of the opposition, they take care of it, and they change many things so that to be very equal, very transparency, very objective of the way to conduct this campaign and this election.
I understand the Electoral Commission, or CNE, wants to begin publishing the result Sunday night after the election and continue on Monday. Why are the opposition not pleased with that action from the CNE? Do they think the CNE will make a mistake when it goes fast in publishing the results?
The opposition think that it's a bad job to go in the hurry for publishing the result in Sunday night. They want the CNE to take time to be sure that the publishing of the result that he will do is a good result, and there is no corruption and there is no problems on these results. So the opposition, they came out to say that they are not agree of this position of CNE. And the CNE want to keep his rules, and they want to keep the way they work. They want to publish quickly the result as they can, because they put a lot of money on the dispositive so that to get the result quickly. You know, if we don't have the result quickly, it could bring a violence. It's an African election, and we have to go fast and good and fast and quickly. So the CNE wants to go fast to give a good result and quickly to avoid all kind of violence about this election.
Lionel Bilgo is a political analyst and CEO of Timinyi's Media. He spoke with me from the Burkinabe capital, Ouagadougou. A group of concerned Ghanaians in the United States is calling on the international community to help stop what they say could be a tragic election in the West African country. This as Ghanaians go to the polls on December 7 to choose a new president, parliament, and local representatives. Protesting near the capital, Washington, D.C. Saturday, the group expressed concern about measures the electoral body has implemented, which they contend could undermine the credibility of the polls. They also accused the Electoral Commission of bias in favor of the governing party, an accusation officials of the electoral body deny. Solomon Owusu is the convener of the concerned Ghanaians group. For VOA, he tells reporter Kemeni Amano that it appears the administration is using state institutions, including the police, to intimidate prospective voters in the run-up to the elections.
During the voters' registration process, the registration centers that belong to the major opposition political party, we had a lot of reports about some hooligans who portray themselves to be people from the national security, who brutalize people during the protest registration just to scare them not to register, so that the major opposition party wouldn't get enough people to vote for the party during the election day. And some people were killed, two people were killed in the process. People were assaulted, including members of parliament, like here we say congressmen. They were assaulted and they were arrested by the police. Unfortunately, those people were released by the police and no prosecutions were done. And because of that, people are waiting for the main election where they also retaliate. And all those things are creating tension in the upcoming elections that we're going to conduct.
You seem to suggest that these brutalities that you have outlined are state-sponsored or have some sort of a link with the government. How do you know this?
You know, we are in the United States here, yeah, but we follow all proceedings in Ghana. We follow our political staff in Ghana. And anything that happens in Ghana within a few minutes because of the social media stuff, and then the news that we hear on our radio stations in Ghana, we get all information. So that's, you know, how we got to know.
Could you please articulate for me what your concerns are with the Electoral Commission head?
There was a register that we compiled in 2012, that biometric register, and we used that one to elect our former president, John Dramani Mahama, and we used the same register to elect the current president, Ahmadu Dankwa Akufo-Addo. This woman decided to change the register by compiling a new register. And during that process, we encountered a lot of flaws. If you say something is biometric, we thumbprint your fingers. So at the end of the day, if a thumbprint is done and facial recognition is done, why should we have more than one having different names, same names and all that? It was something that was deliberate.
She has denied these accusations about her attempting to rig the elections in favor of the sitting president. She has also explained why there were some irregularities during the registration process. Why is it that these explanations she has given in the past don't convince you enough that she's doing the right thing?
I'm not sure if she has denied all the allegations that have leveled against her. It's something that has happened, and, you know, people have raised concern, and she doesn't want to listen to anybody. So the observers, as they are there, they should expect intimidations, they should expect brutalities, they should expect rigging, and I will add legal banter, because if the opposition wins, the sitting president may go to court.
Solomon Owusu is the convener of the Concerned Ghanaians Group. He spoke with Kemini Amano from here in Washington, D.C. The Electoral Commission of Uganda is coming under criticism after sending a voter list outside the country for review. The groups say the electoral body failed to inform them and other stakeholders before sending a copy of the list to the Netherlands. The move, they argue, is suspicious and could be used to rig next year's elections, an accusation the commission denies. The electoral body says the contractor is using its equipment to help clean up the list to ensure there is no duplication of names. Paul Bukenya is a spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. He tells me the organization is in the process of cleaning up the voter registry as part of the effort to ensure transparent and credible elections.
Well, first we did the cleanup, what you call a cleanup, because we compiled the register, then we displayed it. The public, the voters came up and looked at their particulars, they collected them, and we call it a display. So we concluded that process. But again, we are now preparing to load the register onto a biometric voter verification system, which we'll use on the polling day. And for that purpose, we've got a vendor who's going to provide the equipment. And before we load the register onto the kits, we had to do another process called deduplication. We look for any duplicates if possible, so that because the system is supposed to guarantee that there is only one person under the name and that they vote once. So we're now preparing to upload it on the biometric voter verification system and later on put it on the kit that will go to each polling station. So for that purpose, we did a process with the vendor, the guys who sold us the technology, who are based in the Netherlands.
What is the significance of taking the voter register that you are working on to the Netherlands?
Well, it's part of the finalization process. Like I said, we have a vendor who has a server capacity that can run more than almost 18 million records and look for duplicates without us having to buy that technology and going through the lengthy processes. It's consistent with our finalization program and arrangement. Everything is within the terms that we set out for the vendor, including non-disclosure agreements and all that. Eventually, the register is housed here. It is not based anywhere.
So, Paul, how does this enhance the transparency with regards to the processes of finalizing this voter list to be used for the elections?
It's a transparent process. The agreement, the contract is a public document, and what is expected of the vendor is public. It's known among stakeholders. So, and of course, before we deploy the technology in January, we will be doing public demonstration how the kit will be used at a polling station. And it also helps to build confidence in the public that a voter will appear only once on the register and that they will vote once, which is the reason we are deploying biometric voter verification technology. So It is a significant step in the finalization of the cleaning and preparation for printing for the registered electorates in January.
How does the Electoral Commission explain to stakeholders who are suspicious of this action? Because I said that because I understand opposition leaders, including Betty Aol Ochan, questioned the motive of the Electoral Commission and wondered why sensitive data should be shared with third parties without involving all stakeholders. How do you respond to such criticism?
I can imagine why sometimes there's suspicion, but that would go with engagement and more voter education and sensitization. Otherwise, the register is developed in collaboration with many stakeholders, but we are the ones who finally handle the final product. We work with the National Registration Authority, for example, to identify citizens, and we share information. But then besides that, the vendor is going to be the firm providing biometric voter verification kit, accesses the register because they have to upload it onto the kits that are going to be placed at each station. And I think it's just a lack of understanding of what exactly goes on, which eventually will be public knowledge. Because we're going to do public demonstration, we're going to do voter awareness on the use of the kit itself at the polling station. People need to prepare. They're going to be, placing their thumbprints and being identified, and you identified, you vote once, and you're covered across the country. You cannot vote at another polling station across the country. So it is... We are building transparency and confidence in the register.
How credible do you think this register would be, and what should be the expectations of Ugandans as you compile this list to be used for the elections?
We compiled it with the citizens. We registered Ugandans, and now we are deploying the technology that will also enhance the transparency and the increase on the accuracy and all that. So I think it's all going to give us the same product. So we will definitely be engaging the voters and the public and the political leaders for that matter. We will not just deploy a kit on polling day. We are going to take them through. We're going to do dry runs of what's expected. Our messages on voter education are going to increase awareness that on polling day you expect to have such and such technology, and this is how it will be used in a safe manner. Especially given that we have COVID-19 around us. So it's all part of the confidence-building efforts that we're making, and, of course, adapting technology to enhance transparency and credibility of the process.
Paul Bukenya is a spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Ugandan presidential candidate Bobby Wine was recently released on bail after spending 2 days in jail. Wine, a legislator and popular musician whose real name is Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, was arrested Wednesday as he addressed a campaign rally. His arrest sparked protests across the country, leading to loss of lives and scores of injuries. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
According to the court charge sheet, Kyagulanyi negligently committed an action which he knew or had reason to believe was likely to spread the infection of COVID-19. He appeared before Chief Magistrate Catherine Aguero, who granted him a non-cash bail and directed him to adhere to all Electoral Commission guidelines on the coronavirus, which limit campaign meetings to no more than 200 people, all wearing face masks and observing social distancing. Critics claim the restrictions are aimed at keeping opponents of long-serving President Yoweri Museveni from campaigning. Wine says the arrests and imprisonments will not break his resolve.
But I have news for you, Mr. Museveni, and all those that work to sustain your dictatorship. You cannot be broken. You can imprison our bodies, you can tear gas and pepper spray our bodies, but you cannot touch our souls. We are not going to stop fighting for a better Uganda, and we shall get our freedom. The people of Uganda, do not give up. They cannot kill us all. We are not slaves. We are going to get our freedom, and that will be soon.
Wine has condemned police brutality, allegedly meted out on those who were protesting his arrest.
While I'm out and while I'm happy that I can connect with friends and family, this is no happy day. We mourn the death of innocent people murdered in cold blood. I've learned that over 500 were arrested, many are nursing wounds, and indeed, many of them are still incarcerated. We condemn that.
The death toll from the protests has climbed to 37, most from bullet wounds. Security teams say they have arrested 577 people during the 2 days of sporadic protests. Mulago, the National Referral Hospital, is expanding its casualty ward bed capacity in anticipation of more patients as a result of the riots. The international group Human Rights Watch has called for investigations and says arrest of Wine is a sign of the growing repression of opposition politicians ahead of January 14th general elections. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A civil society group is calling for the firing or resignation of some officials of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. The Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, expressed concern that the unequal distribution of equipment for registration centers across the country will undermine the ongoing voter registration process. Backed by a consortium of other civil society groups, YALI contends that the problem will mean more eligible voters in the strongholds of main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, will be registered, a disadvantage to opponents, including the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, or PF. This, as the Electoral Commission compiles a voter list for next year's general election. Andrew Interwewe, head of the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, tells me the Electoral Commission has failed to address the unequal distribution of equipment for voter registration despite repeated calls to address the problem.
Our biggest concern is that the distribution of these registration kits has been very unfair. What has happened is that Southern Province has been given the highest number of voter registration kits as opposed to places like Lusaka, Copperbelt, Northern, Muchinga, and Luapula provinces. So our concern is that the registration kits have been unfairly distributed.
The way local media reported it, it looks like it was a plan by the Electoral Commission to register more opposition voters than the ruling party. Is this your assertion?
You see, we're a very neutral organization. And because we are very neutral, what we bring to the fore are issues that are verified by data. But the other thing you are able to see is that today we have the actual numbers of the people that have registered as voters. And true to our data collection, Southern Province, which was given the highest registration kits, is topping the list in terms of people that have registered to vote in the 2021 election. Their numbers are now at 219,488, as opposed to Lusaka Province, which has the highest number of voters per the last demographic survey, which stands at only 165,782. And our argument is that Lusaka's low numbers, Luapula low numbers, Northern Province low numbers are as a result of the unfair distribution of the registration kits. Whereas in Southern Province, because they have got adequate kits, what is happening is that a person is taking only 4 minutes on the queue for them to be registered as a voter. And that is our biggest challenge.
Andrew, has your organization, together with the civil society organizations and students, officially petitioned the Electoral Commission about this concern?
We have given the Electoral Commission of Zambia 7 days to be able to deal with this problem. And we want to believe that there is serious maladministration at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. And so we have called for the dismissal of the manager in charge of elections and manager in charge of voter education. We hope and trust that ECZ can quickly correct this anomaly, which has caused discrepancies in the number of people that are registering as voters. If ECZ does not deal with these issues within 7 days, we shall officially protest and ensure that we give a petition to the chairman of the Electoral Commission of Zambia and his commissioners to take decisive action. Right now, we believe that this is a matter that is administrative, which the chief electoral officer at the Electoral Commission of Zambia can be able to deal with.
I spoke with some officials at the Electoral Commission, and they are of the opinion that they will continue to engage with civil society groups, all stakeholders, to address any concern before the conclusion of the voter registration process. Isn't this part of a concern that they can address instead of demanding a resignation of some officials there?
So, first of all, when we issued the public statement at the very beginning, what happened is that the ECZ responded. They gave us a very lukewarm, if you like, a substandard response. For instance, they told us that they are an autonomous institution. They handle their own internal operations without interference from anyone and so forth and so on. We have never questioned the independence of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. But what we are saying is that there is maladministration in the registration of voters. And ECZ, like any other governance institution in Zambia, must be liable to public scrutiny. They cannot run away from being held accountable on the basis of autonomy. And so the response that we have received, as I have indicated, is substandard, and it does not inspire confidence that the Electoral Commission of Zambia is going to do the correct thing. That is the reason why yesterday we went giving the actual data in terms of the unfair distribution of registration kits in Southern Province per district. So we are hopeful that ECZ can rectify themselves, do self-introspection, and do the correct thing and properly engage stakeholders and deal with these challenges that we are seeing in the registration process.
Andrew Ntewewe is head of the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, a civil society group. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. But first, Doctors Without Borders is calling for an end to sexual violence in the eastern region of the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. The group also expressed concern that there is a rise in what it described as a shocking number of sexual violence cases perpetrated by armed groups in the Salamabila area of Maniema province. This after the organization says it has treated an estimated 1,000 survivors of sexual violence since the beginning of the year. It also says about 85% of the cases were carried out by armed men. Carlos Francisco, Doctors Without Borders head of mission in the DRC, is calling on other humanitarian organizations to help strengthen protection services for residents in Salamabila. He tells me that violence against civilians in Salamabila has almost normalized sexual violence, which he says is regrettable. He adds that the attacks are having a serious impact on the physical and mental health of the people living there.
What we witness now in Salamabila, in Maniema province, is that this spike in sexual violence is not always related to a spike in the conflict. What we see in another part is that when there are attacks from any armed group, they are going together with an increase in sexual violence. Here in Salamabila, what we see is even without these attacks from armed group on villages or without any combat, we see that the rates and the case of sexual violence are very high, meaning that this violence is there even without the conflict. We see that most of the people committing this act, they are armed men, combatants, let's say, or people with arms, but it's not always directly related with fighting. It's just related with the behavior of these armed men.
So, Carlos, have you found out, or is there a reason why you're seeing this spike in relation to sexual violence where you are?
That's difficult to say. The situation is that the sexual violence is really normalized. I would not say in the society, but within the armed men. They consider that the fact that they have an arm, they give them the right, and for sure they give them the power to commit those acts. And this is what is worrying us more, because we don't see how the problem can be solved, no? Because if we relate the sexual violence just with the fightings, then we can say, okay, if there is no fighting, there will not be any other sexual violence. But what we see here is, even without fightings, even without an active conflict, we see that the prevalence of this sexual violence is very high. That's why we call everyone having a weapon to stop these attacks to the civilian population.
Carlos, some Congolese I spoke with are saying that it appears that in that area, sexual violence appear to be normalized. Is this the situation you are seeing on the ground at the moment?
That's what we see, no? Otherwise, it would be difficult to explain that. Well, it's true that during this year, there have been several spikes of fightings in the area. But even when the situation is calm here in Salamavila and in other places, what we see is that this sexual violence is ongoing. It's in fact a part of the life. I would not say that normal life, because this is not a normal life, but it's a part of the daily life.
Some people are suggesting that the normalization of sexual violence in Salamavila could increase your workload for you to treat victims of these incidents of violence, which keeps rising. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, of course, we try to put all the resources that are needed to take care of these survivors. But I think the point is what we are trying is not just to take care of them, but try to reduce that fact. No? So I think the worrying thing is that, as you say, is normalized, and even if you treat the women that are surviving these attacks, if the attacks are there, the trauma will be there, not just for the women, but for all the society, as I was saying before, no? We have to think that the sexual violence doesn't stop. The effect of the sexual violence doesn't stop after the rape, let's say, no? It will continue all over the time, because it's not only affecting the women, but it will also affect her family and all the society around them, no? And this is what we are trying to reduce somehow, no? That's why we are asking all the humanitarian actors who are specialized in protection of civilians to come and work with us in Salamavila, to take the responsibility in this problem. And we are especially asking the armed men, the perpetrator, to stop doing this, to stop attacking the woman, and to stop doing this sexual violence. No, we focus on armed group, let's say, because we know that most of the armed men are part of any of the armed actors present in the area. No, so we stop them to stick to the humanitarian international law, to respect the life and the dignity of civilians. And this is what we are denouncing, this specific event, because it's the last of a series during years in Salamavila and in other parts of East Congo. So our efforts are not only to provide health care to these survivors, but also we are trying to stop that problem, or to reduce it.
Carlos Francisco is Doctors Without Borders head of mission in the DRC. He spoke with me from Salamabila, eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. World Health Organization's 194 member states have agreed to push for the global elimination of cervical cancer, a disease that every year affects 570,000 women and kills more than 300,000. A new strategy to accelerate the elimination of cervical cancer was adopted at this year's World Health Assembly. For the UAE, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Cervical cancer is a vaccine-preventable disease and curable if detected early and adequately treated. Health officials say the tools are available to eliminate this disease, the fourth most common cancer among women globally. WHO's three-point strategy calls for all girls to be vaccinated for HPV or human papillomavirus before age 15. It says women should be screened twice between the ages of 35 and 45, and those found to have the cancer should receive treatment. WHO's Assistant Director General, Princess Nothemba Simulela, says new technology based on artificial intelligence can be used to screen women for cervical cancer.
If these technologies are used, we would be able to get a diagnosis of cervical cancer within 15 to 20 minutes. At this point in time, turnaround from the laboratories can be anything up to a month or longer. And women don't get their results because most of them don't stay or live nearest to the facility.
Simulela says the rapid diagnosis will be a lifesaver for many women in developing countries. She says they will be able to be treated immediately on site for a precancerous condition without having to return. WHO reports sub-Saharan Africa has the highest number of cases and deaths from cervical cancer, followed by countries in Southeast Asia. Simulela warns cases and deaths will continue to rise in countries that do not invest in vaccines, screening, and testing.
The African continent is the only continent that will be reporting higher populations beyond 2030. So they'll be dealing with a double burden there, in that they'll have a bigger number of young people to get to with the vaccine and a larger population of older women who will be having cervical cancer who have not been treated.
Cases and deaths in high-income countries are much lower than in low-income countries because of the wide use of the preventable vaccine, which can run as high as $110 a dose. Simulela says developing countries can obtain the HPV vaccine at an affordable price of less than $5 a dose through the Gavi Alliance procurement system. Gavi helps vaccinate children against infectious diseases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's kick off with the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Mali booked their place at an eighth consecutive Nations Cup finals after beating Namibia 2-1 in Group A. Mali's win put them at 10 points, two ahead of second-placed Guinea, with Namibia on 3 points, and still with a mathematical chance of grabbing second place. However, Chad, who drew 1-1 with Guinea on Sunday, cannot now qualify. In Group J, Tunisia also earned their place at the Nations Cup finals, despite being held 1-1 in Dar es Salaam by hosts Tanzania. In this group, Tanzania are third on 4 points, two behind Equatorial Guinea in second place, with Libya on 3 points. In Group C, Sudan scored a last-minute winner to edge past visiting Ghana on Tuesday. The result means that Ghana will have to wait to qualify for the finals. Ghana are 9 points, level with South Africa, as Sudan move to 6 points. The other team in the group are Sao Tome and Principe, who are yet to win a single point after their 4-2 loss to South Africa on Monday. Morocco remained unbeaten in Group E with a 2-0 win over Central African Republic in a game that was played in the Cameroonian city of Douala because there is no suitable stadium in Bangui. Morocco are now top of the group with 10 points and need only a draw from their final two games to qualify for the finals. Mauritania are on 5 points after their 3-1 loss in Burundi, who have 4 points, and the Central African Republic stay on 3 points. Tuesday's two games in Group L failed to produce a single goal, as Nigeria were once again held by Sierra Leone. The Lion Stars had pulled off a remarkable comeback last Friday to come from 4 goals down to earn a 4-4 draw. Nigeria is still top of the group with 8 points, one ahead of Benin. Sierra Leone move into third place on 3 points, and Lesotho are bottom on 2 points. In Group G, Egypt moved ahead of Comoros on goal difference after a 3-1 win in Togo, who are now out of contention. Egypt and Comoros both have 8 points and look the most likely to reach the finals. Kenya, who lost 2-1 to Comoros, have 3 points. In Group K, Ivory Coast topped the group due to a better head-to-head record over Madagascar. Both teams have 7 points. Ethiopia moved 6 points after beating Niger 3-0, who stay on 3 points. The Gambia top Group D ahead of Gabon on goal difference, with both teams on 7 points. DR Congo moved to within a point of the top two after beating Angola 1-0, who have just 1 point. In Group F, Rwanda held on for a point against visiting Cape Verde, despite playing an hour with 10 men. Cape Verde now move level with Mozambique in the group on 4 points, with Rwanda with just 2 points. In Monday's results, Eswatini drew with Congo in Group I. In Group B, Malawi and Burkina Faso settled for a goalless draw, while South Sudan beat Uganda 1-0. And Zimbabwe and Algeria settled for a 2-2 draw. In Group D, the Gambia beat Gabon 2-1, while Mozambique beat Cameroon 1-0 in Group F. Elsewhere, Caster Semenya, the double Olympic 800 meters champion, will appeal against the World Athletics rule restricting testosterone levels in female runners to the European Court of Human Rights. The 29-year-old South African lost two previous appeals in the Court of Arbitration for Sport and Switzerland's Federal Supreme Court. Semenya, who won Olympic gold in 2012 and 2016, will not be able to defend her 800 meters title at the rearranged Tokyo Games next year. Athletics governing body brought in a rule in 2019 that athletes with differences of sexual development, DSD, must either take medication in order to compete in track events for 400 meters to a mile or change to another distance. But in March, Semenya said she wants to compete in the 200 meters, a distance for which she would not need to take medication. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Kuchutama na wasimame wima kamwe watopata mwanya habisi fitina wafike mabilinganya itutoke dina nalegea ukimtazama yako macho yako macho. Toto hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, jamani hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, ya jumbani, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, kuta ndani, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi. Katoto ya somo na kukwi chumbani kiranga kinaishaga komo kirumi nisakata makirikiri kuni washaka kipiri kuni haswa mikitiri unipani lewe kwasa kwasa ndani pingiri na kukata saga kajiri nani haswa unafikiri kama sio wewe nichezeshe kidaru sosi kwa manane kanga nikande kipanda uso tunikane kanga nipitishe bodala uko tukakutane kanga siyepi ni wauputo wasijichanganye watapasuka nalegea ukimtazama yako macho yako macho. Katoto hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, jamani hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, kulembua, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi, kunilidua, hodari, hodari wa mapenzi. Are you like that? Hodari. Hodari wa mapenzi, oh ya hodari, hodari wa
sick when I'm far away from you for so long. I lose sleep when I can't get you on the phone. And it's killing me, baby. Oh, I'm missing you, baby. Please don't stay away. I need you every day. What we share, it is so rare, it can be bought. Come home, please, baby. Let's kiss and talk all night. Cause I'm missing you, baby. And it's killing me, baby. Please don't stay away. I need you every day. Baby, oh baby, you're like medicine to me. You give me everything I need. Baby, oh baby, you're like medicine to me. You give me everything I need. Then we fight and you wear a crown. And I smile every single time you come around. Can't do without you. I built my whole world around you. Please don't go away. I need you every day.
Oh, your way.
The highway to fill my heart. And your smile is the medicine that cures my doubt. Oh, my beautiful baby. Wrap your loving around me.
Baby, oh baby, you're like medicine to me. You give me everything I need. Baby, oh baby, you're like medicine to me. You give me everything I need.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sally, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, and Producer Said Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, he that beats the drum for the madman to dance is no better than the madman himself. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.